Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to episode 110 of Double Hop Beat, where we take the pulse of the beer and brewing scene. I'm James, a home brewer and craft beer enthusiast.
And I'm Shannon, a beer intermediate. We are joined this episode by someone very special. We are here with Ronnie, aka RW, of RW's Brewing. Welcome, Ronnie.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Good. We are doing great. How are you?
Good. The yeast are flocculating. They're attenuating. We're excited for this episode. We're ready to go. Welcome to the show, Ronnie.
Yeah. And so we'll just dive in like we do with everyone and just have you give our listeners just an overview of how you got into brewing and how your journey has developed.
So getting into home brewing for me is actually kind of an interesting story. One of my neighbors, this is like in 2013, was having a neighborhood night out, just like for everyone in the neighborhood kind of get to know each other. And so we're all like standing around kind of talking. And one of the guys I got introduced to, actually his name was RW or Robert Wilson. And he's like, yeah, I need to go. I'm going to brew a beer tomorrow. I'm like, you brew beer? He's like, yeah. I'm like, can I come watch? He's like, yeah, sure. Come on down. The more the merrier. So next day I went down to his house and he's running a full grain brew. He's doing a porter and I sat there and watched him, and I like, I can do this. I want to do this. I've always been interested in it. So, you know, just chatting with him for a little bit and kind of got a feel for things. I'm like, man, I want to try a batch myself. He's like, man, just come grab my equipment and do it. It's all you can do. So I did. I went and picked up his equipment a couple of days later, and I brewed a porter all grain. I mean, I started all grain, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just kind of snowballed from there. You know, he pretty much the brewing equipment stayed here at my house and he'd come down and do brew days with me. And,
that's funny.
And then he was moving in with his girlfriend from his house to an apartment. He's like, well, you can just keep it here, you know, and whenever I want my equipment back, I can just get it, right? And I'm like, of course, it's your equipment. No problem. So I basically had his equipment for like a year and a half. And he's like, hey, I'm moving to North Carolina. Can I have my equipment? I'm like, sure. I said, I've already pretty much built my whole electric brewery now over the last year and a half using your equipment. So yeah, so it was pretty interesting. And yeah, I just kind of paid homage to him when I kind of took on the name RWs because my name's Ronnie William. Oh. So I'm like, hey, well, he's an RW, I'm an RW. It's kind of paying homage to him because I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here talking with you guys right now if he didn't introduce me to homebrewing.
I mean, what a great neighbor too, of like not only inviting you over, but then you sharing, saying like, oh, I want to get into it. And then him being like, well, you want to borrow my equipment? Like, feel free, like borrow it. And then just, it's crazy how it worked out for you of like, you had it for a full year so you could brew on it, see what you liked about it. Kind of, like you said, you were building up your system. Was this a propane or electric that he had?
No, the first, it was all natural. It was all propane.
Okay.
And, you know, igloo cooler, the whole nine yards. And I kind of got into it and I'm like, I kind of worked in the electrical field a little bit. And so I had an idea of control panels and stuff. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to dive in and build an electric brewery. And so that's what I worked on during that time frame. And so when he was ready for his equipment, I was ready to plug in, I guess you can say.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say, oh, yeah, I already sold it. So
sorry, man. Yeah, the wife was telling me to get rid of that. But yep, sold.
He had a lot of trust in you to keep that stuff safe for sure.
Yeah, he's a good friend. Really is.
So now what are you brewing on? You said it's electric. Currently, is it? What, how many barrels? How big is your system now?
So my system, it's kind of a hybrid system. I have a basic system that's built using the electric brewery off of Kai's design is what I started with. I do have a Blichmann 55-gallon boil kettle that's set up to where I can brew half-barrel batches on it because I have 3 half-barrel fermenters. Yeah. And I just picked up a 2-barrel mash tun, believe it or not.
Wow. So you're brewing big batches then. You're in the big realm.
No, I'm still doing half barrel batches and keeping it there. But it's just like if the opportunity ever opens for me to maybe like do a nano somewhere, I'm kind of in a position to like roll right into it.
That's great. I mean, in what was the original system that you were brewing on? Like this typical like 10-gallon, 5-gallon batch?
No, it's a kegel system. So I start out with all kegels. And I mean, I'd get about 13 gallons out of each batch.
Wow. So you really did dive in like full bore. Like 13 gallons is a lot if you're trying to learn. And like, if it doesn't come out well, like that's a lot of liquid there.
Got a lot of friends who like free beer.
See, there you go. That's,
and they can't complain what it tastes like. It's free. So if it wasn't the best, then it's still getting drunk.
And what was the first beer that you brewed? I always ask that question.
Because I was a porter, right?
Yeah, it was a porter. I mimicked his recipe.
Okay, so you smart. So brilliant. Like you saw him do the porter, you had something, and you just went off of it on your own as well.
Yeah, so he gave me a copy of the recipe, and I went down to my local homebrew store and picked up all the ingredients, the hops and the yeast. And I mean, I made some mistakes, but it still came out good because, I mean, at that time, I really didn't understand alpha acids, you know, and that aspect of the hop additions and stuff. I was like, 2 ounces of hops. So I just grabbed 2 ounces of hops and threw in. I didn't know what the alpha acids were at the time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I could never really, like, duplicate what I was doing back then. And, you know, as time went along, I learned about alpha acids and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, I can duplicate the bitterness pretty much every time now, as long as I write everything down.
Now, did you think when you first started homebrewing that you would get so in depth into kind of like the science and the components that go into homebrewing, or were you kind of just getting into it thinking like, oh, this is maybe a fun hobby for me to do?
Yeah, that's kind of a funny story there too. So everyone's telling me how great my beer was. I'm like, well, everybody likes free beer. So I'm like, I'm going to enter a homebrew competition. Okay. First one. It was Blue Bonnet 2015. It's one of the largest ones in Texas right now. And I submitted an Oktoberfest. And I just joined a homebrew club here called Austin Zealots. So it's like a little free club. Everyone gets together. And so I was hanging out with them. I'm like, yeah, I entered an Oktoberfest. I'm like, man, don't get your feelings hurt. You're not going to medal here. It's so hard to get a medal here. You're not going to get one. I got a silver medal from my Oktoberfest.
Oh, wow.
Wow. And that was your first go at an Oktoberfest, or you kind of been working on an Oktoberfest?
No, that was my first go as an Oktoberfest and my first homebrew competition. And then one of my buddies is like, yeah, good luck doing it again. And my wife looked at him and was like, no, you did not. She said, you just challenged him, and so now he will. So, yeah, that kind of like really got the spark really rolling in me, and I just really, I mean, I enjoy it. I mean, it's, I enjoy brewing as much as I enjoy drinking the beer. You know, that's the amazing thing. I can sit there and brew all day long and not even drink. And well, I try not to drink when I brew. That's until I'm like at like knockout, then it's fine. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it just snowballed from there. I mean, I just started entering homebrew competition after homebrew competition, and, you know, starting getting more and more awards and accolades. And as I was going along, I was like, started doing more and more research. I mean, Google is amazing. I mean, things you can learn on Google. And the brewing industry, man, everybody's so helpful. I mean, you go to a brewery and talk to brewers there, and people even work there, and they're like, they're willing to help. And like, hey, you know, we do bulk grain buys every once in a while. If you want to buy some bulk grain every once in a while, I'm like, yeah, sure. So, I mean, it's a great community. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, that's great that you really have that support system where the craft brewers are also helpful in answering questions like that too. But you can always tell those brewers that are really passionate about what they do. They're always happy to help and always happy to share some of their knowledge, because you know what? The recipes are recipes, but you know, it's, if you have a good palate, you know, you can come close to recipes regardless of if they tell you what's in it or not. It's just helping other people out. That's really what it's about.
Well, that's why I tell my wife, she gets mad when I share my recipes. She's like, you're sharing your recipes? I'm like, yeah, I'm sharing my recipes, but I'm not giving my salt additions.
Yeah. Not giving away the whole shebang, just a little bit, a little taste.
Yeah, no, I give you an idea, and you need to...
And get you in the ballpark, but you still got to swing the bat to get the ball to leave the park, you know?
Oh, no, most exactly. And even I tell her that, too. I said, it even doesn't matter. I said, every equipment is actually different. So when I change equipment, I have to, like, play with the recipe to try to bring it back to where it was. Because, I mean, it does change. You know, if you're doing different size batches or... I mean, most of the time, my bowl kettles and everything are the same, so they're pretty good. Like, I was running the mash tun, the new one, and I've had to play with my water a little bit and adjust it. And I got my numbers in on this last brew pretty good. So it's just kind of figured out as you go, you know?
And if you had to give a homebrewer who is looking to get into competitions one piece of advice for entering a competition, what would that be? What would you share with that young or old homebrewer that's looking to go into competitions?
Well, I mean, the first and foremost thing I can say, and everyone says it, is sanitation is like number one. I mean, it's like the most number one. But one thing that I do, and I think it's helped me a lot, is my carbonation levels are just a smidge higher than what is called for. So that way, when I do bottle or I do can, because you lose a little bit of that CO2 as you go along, by the time it gets packaged and from there, it'll balance out to where the carbonation levels where it's supposed to be. Because, I mean, I've judged competitions, and I've got some really great beers that just, the carbonation level just wasn't there. And it's like, man, if the carbonation level was there, it'd be like spot on, you know? So yeah, just, you know, like I said, I try to go, you know, 2 to 3 tenths above what normally call for. And like I said, when you run a bottling gun and all that, because a lot of the CO2 bubbles through it and it knocks some of it out of suspension. So I think that's what helped me a bunch.
Okay. Good to know. James is kind of toying with the idea of maybe entering a competition. So he's secretly
like, for a young homebrewer or an old homebrewer out there trying to get into competitions. It's always, I'm asking for myself.
I don't know. It's fun because like, especially if you go to the competitions, because then you get like, especially like club night where everyone runs around and you get to meet everybody and try different people's beers. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really good learning experience. I mean, it definitely is going to help you grow as a brewer, you know? And that's one thing I say, don't get your feelings hurt, you know, because I mean, I've sent beers to one homebrew competition and got like a 29. I'm like, how did I get a 29? And then same batch I sent off and I scored a 43 at a different location.
It's wow.
Like,
yep.
So a lot of it depends on the judge. Mm-hmm. They may have just had a total hot bomb that just destroyed their entire palate right before that, or, you know, a lactic acid bomb or something. Yeah. So, I mean, their palate could just be shot after that. And so it is what it is, you know, like I said, take it with a grain of salt and, you know, take the notes and look at them and, yeah, and go on to the next competition.
Yeah. I think the notes is the one thing that I really look forward to in a competition where they provide that feedback of just, they're not going to say it's a great beer or a bad beer. They're going to tell you specifically things about the beer that you can use for the next go at the recipe. So mm-hmm. I think that's the one thing that I'm really looking forward to for competitions is just finding which competition and planning my brewing schedule
strategic
to have it ready for that competition.
Yeah, I've been planning. I'm sending 5 off to nationals this year. So wow. I'm, you can send 10, but I'm like, yeah, I'm not sending 10.
I'll scale it back. I'll do 5.
I don't have that kind of bandwidth or wallet, so.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty expensive. But. So I'm finished up my last 2 beers right now. I've got a hazy IPA that's got 2 more days of dry hopping, then it's ready to keg, and I have an Oktoberfest that's it's under pressure fermentation right now. It'll be ready to probably package here in about 2 weeks.
Is that Oktoberfest the same one that you've entered in that first competition, or is that a recipe that you've tweaked?
Oh, no, it's the same recipe.
Okay.
And once I've got it dialed in, I've just kept it there.
I mean, stick man, Shannon, you got gold in your pocket, you know, it's hard to stray from that.
So. Yeah, like I said, I mean, I'm pulling silver medals with it, even bronze. I mean, I'm happy. I mean, if I'm medaling, I'm happy. I don't, you know, so I'm in a mindset now, if I'm scoring, you know, mid-30s and upper, I'm happy, whether I'm medal or not. Because, I mean, that tells me it's a really good beer.
Yeah. For sure.
Now, how's your wife feel about all these medals accumulating? Is she like, great, where am I going to put that? Where are you going to put this one?
No, they're all in the garage.
they're already in the garage. Shannon's like, oh, I could see James. If he medals, and it could be like not even a bronze, and he could be out on his soapbox at the end of the street wearing the medal.
You'd
like,
get the thanks for coming.
I wouldn't even get the thanks for coming. I'd get the please don't come back.
No, you would not.
No, I know. I'm just
You're too
I'm
hard
just
on yourself.
Kidding. I'm just kidding.
No, I definitely encourage you to do that. I mean, like I said, it's definitely help you improve your brewing, because like I said, you have other people who are brewers, you have judges, and like I said, everybody's pretty good about giving feedback, you know, like, mm-hmm. hey, this was maybe a little bit off, maybe check your mash temperature, or, you know, maybe you oversparged, or, I mean, it's a learning process, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, it's all by trial and error. I mean, I've been fortunate that I think I've only, honestly, I'm not kidding, I think I've only dumped like 3 batches in the entire time I've been brewing.
Wow.
So I'm like, but like I said, I started out with other people's recipes, you know, mm-hmm. they used to get at the homebrew store. So I would follow their recipes. And then as I'd go along, I would look at those and I'd look at other people's recipes, what they were doing online, and kind of the flavor profiles, and kind of like started tweaking them just a little bit and made them my own. And I mean, like I said, it's cooking, you know, that's why I tell everyone, brewing beer is like cooking. I mean, you're mixing different grains and hops, you know, and you're doing different things, different temperatures. I said, it's, you know, if you're a good cook, you can be a good brewer.
Yeah.
That's true. I fully agree with that. Now, we can't talk about competitions without mentioning that in 2017, you were the Sam Adams long shot winner. And I remember back in 2017, that competition. Can you talk about that, especially because we're from Boston, Sam Adams, home of Sam Adams here. So can you talk about your experience with the long shot competition? What was that like?
What'd you do?
It was very, very humbling, I would tell you. It's a big competition, and you know, I would just, I'm still really, really honored to be part of it. It's a great program. I think because of COVID, it's kind of slowed down. Hopefully, Jim and those guys will get it back up and running. Part of my award was I got to go to an online course with Siebel, you know, for the World Brewing Academy, their International Brewing Technology Program, which is a really great course. You know, I mean, yeah, I learned a lot by searching on the internet and Google and all that over the years. But I mean, going through that course, like really like helped set everything in. Mm-hmm. When I won it, he flew me and was supposed to be my wife, but she was actually in a wedding, so she couldn't go. So I took my buddy RW with me to the DABF.
Shout out to RW.
So nice. That's awesome.
So I haven't even thought of the name by then for RW. So I'm like, look, bro, I said, Leah's in a wedding. She can't go. I said, I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for you. I said, you got to go with me. He's like, no way. I'm like, oh, yeah. So, but he flew us out there and put us up. And, you know, we went through the whole, I mean, we got a full, all the GBF tickets for everything. It was awesome. And then after I did my course, he flew my wife and I out to Boston, where I actually worked in the brewery side by side with his team. Great bunch of people there, you know. So, I mean, I went through all aspects of the brewing process. Were, you know, from working in the like milling grains to like packaging to brewing the beer to cellaring and even some lab work. And then I did a whole day, like my wife and I did, of like just legal stuff, like where they're like talking to like legal aspects, like opening up a brewery and different aspects. I mean, it's like a really great mentoring process. I mean, I'm really, really happy to be part of it. I think it really kind of put us in a position to where like we decided that, yeah, we're going to do this. Let's open up a brewery. Mm-hmm. So that's where we were trying to figure out names. And that's when I came up with RWs. And it's like, well, he's an RW and I'm an RW. And that's kind of cute. It's nice. It's short. You know, it's like, hey, let's put RWs and get a beer, you know?
Yeah.
And so it kind of stuck and we just went from there. So then when I brewed my beer with Sammy Adams, so we ended up calling it RWs Austin Helles because it was a Helles.
Such a good beer. Helles. Oh, you got to have Helles. I was just going to ask, what beer did you win? And again, this is when you brewed there, right? The Helles?
Yeah, I did brew that with them. And it was great to be able to scale it up with them and work with Dean and all those guys. And my wife and I got to meet Jim a couple times. And he's a busy, busy man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like, he's like, all right, picture quick. Okay, bye.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Sounds about right.
But yeah, I really hope that they bring it back. I mean, it's a really good program. I mean, like I said, we talked about opening a brewery. We had investors and stuff lined up, and then COVID started coming along, and it's like, you know, I think we should just table this and see what happens. Yeah. And so we're still kind of there.
And how long were you at Sam Adams for? Was it just like a weekend? Was it a longer duration?
No, he flew us for a week. We were there for a week.
Okay.
So it was really awesome. I mean, Leah toured the city, a lot of the city throughout the day. I mean, I would go in and do a full work day with him. And then so she'd be there. So she'd go to the museums and stuff, you know, and then we'd go have dinner and explore the city at nighttime. I really enjoyed the subway there. It was awesome. We don't
transportation system?
Yeah.
Oh, my. I'm going to get that. And I'm going to shop that endorsement to the MBTA because they do not have a lot of fans here.
I was going to say, you're probably the only and first person to say that you loved the transit in Boston. This is great. Ronnie,
that
oh my
cool.
gosh.
We don't have that here.
I know, you guys don't have that, but it is, I took it for 10 years to commute to and from work, and I'm going to take a pass on it.
Well, I mean, I understand if it's like your daily commute thing, yes. But
if you have nowhere to be and you can just go wherever and you don't care if it's delayed, it's wonderful. It's historic. But it is historic.
I can definitely see how coming from a city that does not have any
true.
Public transit, it would definitely be convenient.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I mean, especially being a tourist in the area, it's like, man, it's like so much better than Uber. And I mean, to us, that was actually part of the experience, was actually like running the tram and all that. So it was cool.
Well, we're glad you enjoyed your time in the grand old city of Boston.
Yeah, we definitely want to make it back in a little warmer weather. We were there during January, so.
Oh, yeah, no.
But that's all right. We still had fun.
That's okay.
That's good. I'm glad you did. So from you've been talking, I can tell that you're kind of a guy who likes to figure things out. And one of the reasons that we wanted you to come on the show is that you've cultivated your own yeast and started to build a library of yeast. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So part of my thinking was, I mean, when, like I said, when I was at Sam Adams, I was saving yeast at the time. I was washing it and reusing it and, you know, propagating my own yeast, just like pre-growing it. Cause I mean, you know, $8 a pack for yeast. And, you know, when you're doing lagers, you need, you know, like 5 yeast starters. So I'm like, I'd make my own. And so I would save them and wash them. And I figure the more that I do that, it helps me ensure that my sanitation's up, my cleanliness is up, And then I started looking at like storing it long term. And at the time I'm like, you know, I'm going to try to freeze some of it. And so a couple of the things I looked at was like storing the yeast. Most people are doing like glycerin and just like distilled water. The glycerin helps stabilize the cells, so when they freeze, they don't burst. And so what I started doing was doing the exact same thing, but I started using like a 1010 starter. Like I make a starter, like 1010 gravity. So, and then store them with the glycerin. I figured that way, as it's starting to warm up and wake up, it has some food to help like rebuild its energy during that time frame. And so I froze a few of them to begin with and have them in a cooler with ice packs that inside the freezer. That way, if the freezer does like defrost, whatever, it does not affect those yeast samples. And I let those go for a while and I brought some up and spun them up and they worked out great.
And for those people who are listening who might not know what washing yeast means when you say that, can you describe, is that the first step of the process? What does that term mean?
So basically washing of the yeast is where you, after you've removed your final beer, there's the yeast that's left over. So like I said, I have conical, so I'll take that and I'll dump it into like a jar and then I'll let that settle and then I'll pour the old beer off and then I'll add distilled water to that and shake it up really good and let that settle for a while. And then once it settles for a little bit, you'll get like most of like your dead and all that will settle in the bottom. And then I'll pour off just like that liquid and then I'll let that and I'll decant that and let that settle out. So basically what you're doing is you're washing out any extra beer and any hops and stuff that's in there and trying to get rid of all the dead cells that were still in there, of the spent cells. So you want the younger, vibrant cells that's going to stay in solution longer. And so usually a lot of people do that like 2 to 3 times where then you end up with like a nice really white yeast cake where it's like, it's not yellow or brown or anything like that. And that way you got the best, the youngest and the healthiest.
I couldn't have explained that any better, Ronnie. So I'm glad I asked the question because I could see people out there being, how do you wash your yeast? You take it out back and you just spray it.
I was thinking about like laundering money.
Oh my, yeah. How do you launder the yeast?
Yeah, no. So you need a couple mason jars. And like I said, they need to be clean. And like I said, usually a lot of times I'll run them through. I mean, I'll wash them really good and I'll run them through our dishwasher, which has a heat cycle on them. So that it, you know, kind of pacifies them there a little bit. I mean, it's not like doing a full pacification in an oven at like 185 and let them sit there. But then, like I said, I've got a 5-gallon corny keg that's just full of Sandstar at all given times. So I just keep spray bottles full. And so what I'll do is my jars, I'll just put a couple inches in and put a lid on and shake it up and let it set. And I'll just do that for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. I mean, you just need like 30 seconds of contact, but I just let it sit there until I'm ready at that point, drain that off. And then I'll pour them in there like that and let it settle out. So all the heavy chunky stuff falls to the bottom, pour that liquid off and then add some distilled water to that, shake that up, do the same thing a couple times. So you get like I said, you get the best yeast that way.
So then your end result will be hopefully nice, clean yeast that you can then use to make a starter for your next beer that you're going to use that beer and keep going and going and going to keep extra generations of that yeast.
Yeah, so I get to a tendency where I try to use my yeast for about 7 generations before I dump it. So like I said, I run about 7 batches on each yeast strand that I run. So, I mean, I do a lot of lagers. So, I mean, I use mostly the same lager yeast on all my lagers. So it's not too difficult to do that. So, I mean, like sometimes I'll wash them and I'll just let it sit in the refrigerator for, you know, a month or so between brews, which is fine. But usually what I'll do is I've got away from freezing my yeast because it takes up a lot of space in the freezer. Mm-hmm. And I started putting them on Egger slants. So it's like a little test tube. It's got an agar mixture in it. And then I've been streaking those with the yeast and it starts to grow on there. And I get like a little colony. And once I get a good colony on that, then I put mineral oil on top. I fill the whole jar full of mineral oil. And then I cap that up and just put it in my refrigerator. And they'll last pretty much indefinitely that way.
And that's so crazy to think about because a lot of homebrewers out there get the liquid or the dry yeast package that has like a date of manufacture on there. It has the expiry date. So it's kind of mind-blowing to think that you could have something where typically that now it's like a couple months that they have or very short expiry periods and people on the forums are saying, oh, is it still going to be viable? It's still going to be able to use it. And you have yeast that's going to last, you know, a good amount of time as long as you're making sure it's nice and healthy.
Yeah, well, you got to spin them up too. That's the fun part too is, you know, once you want to do it, I mean, I always make up a yeast starter and usually what I'll do is I'll make like a 2000 milliliter yeast starter. I usually probably go around the 1040 range. But then what I'll do is I'll pour some of that off into a 500 milliliter beaker and I'll dilute that down to about 10, 15. And then I'll pull the yeast. I'll use inoculation loop and I'll pull those yeast out of the agar into that little beaker. And then I'll put a piece of foil on and put it on a stir plate and I'll let that run for a couple days. And there's usually about 200 milliliters of liquid in at that point in time. And then after that, I'll come back and I add maybe like another 100 milliliters like 2 days later. And then I'll come back 2 days later, add another 100 milliliters. And by then I've got a nice little yeast starter going. And then I can, because you have to step it up. You can't just like hit it with like a bunch of, you know, wort at once or just stress it out. But by building up slowly like that, it takes me about 7 to maybe 10 days to go from my slant to a, you know, a good pitchable yeast starter. I mean, like I said, it's time consuming, but like I said, you know, I'm not spending $9 on yeast every time I turn around either. And my local homebrew store, the one that was local to me, close to me, it closed down. So the other one's on the other side of town, which is, well, with traffic, about 30, 40 minute drive.
Wow. Yeah.
So now how much yeast do you have in that refrigerator? And did you have to get a separate refrigerator just for the yeast?
No, I still have the same refrigerator. It's underneath my kegs. There's a little dead space under there. It's about maybe 8-10 inches tall. And they're all on like little plastic, like looks like little test tubes. But I've got 14 different yeast strands right now.
Wow. So you probably look like you got a little lab going on down there.
I'm drooling right now, Ronnie. If you could see me right now, I'm just like, you know, you have those house shows and it's like, well, I got a wine cellar. And you're like, well, I got a yeast library. I'd be like, oh, sold.
So I have not got into like counting my yeast yet and all that, but I finally got myself a microscope and all that stuff so I can start getting in that a little bit more. I've played with a little bit to check viability and I've got good yeast, but I mean, I just, by the time I do my starter and by the time I get a cold crash and, you know, I've got, you know, a 2000 milliliter beaker and I've got a half inch of slurry in the bottom of it, I think I've got enough yeast to pitch.
Yeah, so for me, counting the yeast, that's the fun part. I used to have to count cells in a lab and seeing the viable and non-viable and getting your viability, it was just... Oh,
I didn't know you could count, James, so...
I know. I can't. That's where there's little tools, clickers, you know.
Yeah, you gotta have a clicker.
Gotta have the clicker. And your little squares, you gotta make sure you count whether they're in the square or on the square.
Yeah, so I've picked up everything now. I got methyl blue and everything, so it's just... you know, a little bit at a time.
Ready to rock.
So I guess that's a great transition to if someone's looking to start doing what you're doing, Ronnie, with yeast and trying to cultivate yeast and start your own library. What's the essential equipment that somebody needs? You mentioned the slant. You mentioned the inoculating loop. What kind of equipment does somebody need to think about when they're going to make that move?
So initially when I started, all I had was my, you know, graduated flask, because you have to have pipettes, of course. You know, distilled water, methyl blue, a clicker, and all that if you want to count everything. But basically, I started out with just my Echomyer flasks, some 500 milliliter beakers, and I would just wash everything, and I started storing it. Like I said, I would do like little plastic tubes, and I would store it in the freezer and freeze it. And then, like I said, as I went along, that's when I got more in-depth into it and got like my alcohol lamp. So when I'm doing it, I'll light that so I get an updraft. I'm actually going to build me a hood for it. Little HEPA filter hood. So it's like a
say that five times fast.
Yeah. So it's like so basically it'll filter my air and push everything out so I can make sure that it stays clean. But you're still gonna need the alcohol lamp to sterilize your inoculation loop. I mean, I use Everclear in a spray bottle for cleaning a lot of stuff. It's probably one of the best rubbing alcohols you can get, I guess, because then I'll spray out a dump valve real good with that, and then I'll light it, make sure everything's clean before I try to dump my yeast. That way it kills everything. That's a little something I learned at Sammy Adams. They had like isopropyl in a bottle and they would spray everything and light them before they would transfer the yeast. So it's cool. It's fun.
Yeah, because I guess that would be my biggest concern would be just like something getting in with the yeast and then just not having that level of control for contamination. And then basically you go through the whole brew day, you go through a batch of beer, and then you have contamination on your hands.
So that's one thing that I do while I'm doing my yeast starters. Once I get them going and start spinning up, I always smell them to make sure it doesn't have like a funky smell or acidic kind of like, you know, you'll know if you get like lactic acid infection or something like that. I've had it happen a couple times, but I think that's just because I was in a rush and didn't follow my protocol. Like sanitation. Like I said, sanitation is number one. You know, I'll just grab my little spray bottle and spray my hands. I'm like, oh, that's good enough. It's like, no, I should have put rubber gloves on and sprayed them and went that route.
So I think a good amount of homebrewers are trying to get into it, but not as much as you have, Ronnie. But it sounds like from a financial standpoint, it's the equipment that you were talking about, the flask, some of the other pieces of equipment. Most homebrewers probably have that around anyway, so the amount of equipment that you need to get to start cultivating the yeast, it's more of just learning the techniques and good sanitization practices and more of those things than a financial buying, say, if you're trying to do fermentation, like stainless steel tanks that are thousands of dollars. It doesn't seem like it's that expensive to get into if you're trying to look to get into it.
You can totally procreate off of carboys. I mean, I started on my brewing with carboys, and I used to harvest my yeast from carboys and wash them and reuse them. Cause it's like, I mean, like I said, you know, you're spending $8 for a pack of yeast, you know, and you're going down like, oh, I need to get three yeast packs. I mean, you're, you know, $24. The next thing you know, your batch of beer is going to, it'd be cheaper just to go buy it than it would be to make it. I mean, it's not as fun, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think none of us are making beer to save money. Cause I think,
shh, Ronnie, shh. Shannon doesn't need to know that. I think it's a very spoken truth that I think we all joke about, because it's you know, you get into brewing beer because you want to save money, and then we just go ha 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 ha. If that were the case,
in my case, it started out that I wanted to learn how to do it, and then like I said, it also was like a chance for me and my buddy RW get together and hang out and brew and just, you know, so we're not just sitting there drinking, we're like hanging out and making something. And it's something we both enjoy making, and something we both enjoy doing. And I've got a few people that I've brought over for brew days and kind of walked them through the process and got them interested, but
it didn't
just
hook them.
Some people, yeah, they was like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. That's a lot. I'm like, it's not as much as you think it is.
Yeah. So it can be overwhelming for sure.
You don't have to dive in as deep as I did. I said, don't jump in with both feet in the deep end from the get-go. You know, I mean, I said, I've got glass carboys. If you want to take them and use them, you know, I'll help you get set up. It's not that difficult, you know. Mm-hmm. Start making a small batch, you know. Start out, one of my neighbors, he's starting to make some mead. So he's asking me about sanitation and cleanliness. I'm like, well, here's some PBW. Use this to clean your equipment with. Here's some Star Stand. Once you get everything clean and sanitize everything with this beforehand. So he's got his first batch of mead going, so he's pretty excited. So
that's great that you're kind of paying it forward. The same way that you got into it, you're now trying to, you know, give that same support to another person who's, I mean, it's not beer, but it is, you know, fermentation and creating alcohol. Yeah. So
it's still the same process, just, you know, different, you know, yours and honey versus, you know, malt and mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, if somebody really wants to get into the yeast collection, though, I mean, like I said, just start out by, you know, saving your yeast afterwards and rinsing it, you know, and then from there, you know, just play with that. Really all you need is a couple jars and some distilled water and some good sanitation to start out with. And then, you know, grow it up and spin it with another yeast starter and then repitch it and see how it goes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from there, like I said, I went into freezing yeast. And like I said, the glycerin is the key thing. Otherwise, the cells will just die. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the slants are the way to go, because like I said, they could stay on a shelf. If my power goes out, they're not going to go bad.
I mean, all you could do is try, and if it doesn't work, you try again. So,
well, that's just it. I mean, every time you do a batch, you've got some yeast to play with, you know.
Yeah.
So and, Ronnie, what is your oldest yeast that you have in your library?
My oldest yeast is actually White Labs WLP 830, which is a German lager yeast.
Ooh.
That's my go-to yeast, but I have some Conan, as in like Hetty Topper Conan. I have some of that.
I mean, that would be helpful for a beer I'm trying to make right now. I'm trying to do a Hetty Topper clone, and the yeast is definitely a struggle.
That's a lot of hops, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the most expensive beer I've brewed to date. And I'm only doing a 5-gallon batch because it's so expensive.
I have a 5-gallon batch, and it has 18 pounds of grain and 14 ounces of hops. That's not counting my dry hopping.
Yep, that's pretty much within a pound of the grains and like a couple ounces different from what I have.
Wow. So my hazy that I'm doing right now is Chinook, Mosaic, and Galaxy. And my last dry hop that just went in this is a half barrel batch, was 6.5 ounces of each.
So that's the one thing with like those hazies and the IPAs, that you get hop creep really quick of just the amount of ingredients that you need to throw into that beer.
Yeah, I've never really jumped onto the hazy IPA thing. My whole thing is I've always wanted my beers to be clear because as a home brewer, I'm like, I want to make my beer as good as commercial beer, and everyone's used to them being clear. And then with the hazy came out, and I tried a few, and I'm like, you know, I need to have one. And so I put together a recipe. I sent it to Nationals last year. I scored really good. I didn't advance with it, but I scored a 39, so I'm pretty happy with that.
That's a really solid score.
Yeah, they told me that I entered it in the wrong class because it dropped clear.
Oh, interesting.
So this year I've made a few adjustments, and clear, it won't drop clear.
Have you also canned or bottled and kept some in your fridge or whatever, so then whenever the time is that they would be judging it, you crack one open to see if, once you get those notes, if you've seen that it looks the same on your end, if it's something with the packaging or something like that? Is that something you've done?
Every time.
Because that's something that I've been mindful of. If I'm going to do it, is I'm going to do the same thing, so then I could be like, yep, probably packaging. Or it doesn't look like how it did. You know, a lot of people, they say, well, it doesn't look like how it looked on draft when I had it on draft. It's like, well, you have to factor in the amount of time that it's sitting in the container that it's in.
Yeah, I mean, dissolved oxygen is one of our biggest enemies when it comes to packaging anyways. Mm-hmm. And you guys could do a whole story on that, I'm sure, like forever. You know, I mean, because you get hot side oxidation, you get cold side oxidation. It's just... it's everywhere. You get it in packaging. It's something we deal with, you know? Mm-hmm.
It's like the silent killer.
It really is.
Yeah. That was definitely a silent killer. It's like, this beer is great. It kind of tastes like cardboard. Yeah.
Delicious. My favorite kind.
What kind? Yeah, what brand of cardboard is that?
Corrugated? Is it?
Yeah, is it corrugated cardboard? Is it flat?
Yeah, but definitely, I always try to save something from every batch that I send in. That way, I can sample it during that time frame. And usually, you got to think about it. Most of the judging is done probably like a week or two before the event, anyway. So you're still going to be right in line. So, but yeah, definitely, because I mean, that way you can kind of read their notes, and then you can sample your beer and kind of understand what they're saying, and like hopefully get that, I guess, nuance that they're like, hey, what's this? I'm like, oh, well, yeah, okay, I understand that now. I kind of get that flavor. I do see that. Okay, I understand that.
Yeah, definitely. James, you taking notes over there?
Oh, this whole episode.
You got everything you need now. You have to do
Ronnie,
it.
You're going
to
help me out. I'm going to do it. We'll do it. Just need some motivation. Encouragement. See, I'm getting some encouragement to do these competitions.
Got to hype yourself up for it, James.
Got to hype myself up. I've done one, didn't get any notes feedback. They lost my notes. So, you know.
Wow.
Well, that was on a very small local scale.
Again, it was a very small local scale. So I do give them whatever.
It was not a national or a regional. It wasn't a large.
No, it was not a large. I thought I'd go in nice and easy, you know, dipping the toe in the kid pool.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that's what you got to do. I mean, that's how you do it. I mean, you know, it's not saying that they didn't, that it was a bad competition. It's just, like I said, they didn't get you the feedback and stuff that you wanted or you needed. I mean, it happens, especially with a younger club or something that puts these on. They're like, they're just starting out and, you know, I mean,
you learn, live and learn.
It basically exceeded my expectations anyway, because I entered a blonde ale and I knew going in that a blonde ale probably wouldn't be able to compete against nice hazy IPA or like a barrel aged stout. So they didn't have categories. So it was just more of trying to get feedback on a recipe that I've been trying to work on over the years. So I'll definitely give it a whirl, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of great homebrew competitions out there. I mean, Zoomology, if you look in the back of that, there's usually a big list of those, or you go on AHA's website and it gives you like a lot of lists. You might even find like some small ones that you didn't even know about in your local area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So before we wrap up, we like to do a little mash-in with our guests where we kind of do some rapid fire questions real fast, and just whatever comes to your mind, you can kind of just go with it. So I'm going to start this one. For if you had to name a yeast, what would you name it?
Wow, that's I don't know what to say there. That's crazy.
You can pick any name.
RW.
Yeah,
the RW yeast.
Okay.
It would just depend on like if it's what the yeast is. Is it a lager? Is it an ale? Is it like, you know, something like a wild yeast? I mean, if it's something like a wild yeast that I capture in my backyard, I'd probably call it like Walnut Creek or something like that, because I live on Walnut Creek.
Ooh, see, that's exactly what I was looking for. I was
I would like to go take a, seriously, I've been thinking about taking a ground scraping on the side of my house where I dump all my yeast and like see what comes out of that. There's like probably 20, 30 different yeast strands that's been dumped there over the years.
You could probably create some new
yeast monster
hybrid. Yeah.
So I did just get a new yeast from White Labs called Mythical Hammer. It's a lager yeast.
Ooh, that's a cool name.
It's an amazing yeast. It ferments very well under pressure. So usually when I do my lagers, I'm about 48 degrees when I ferment. I've been fermenting it now at like 55 and letting it get established. And like right now, I've closed it up. So it's fermenting under pressure. And it'll knock out in about 7 days, where usually it takes a good 10 to 14 days. So yeah, yeast is fun.
Okay, so if you, oh, sorry, James, do you want to?
No, go ahead. You get a question. You get a question.
Well, what if it's the same question you were going to ask?
Go ahead. Just go.
Okay. I was just going to ask, if you were a beer, what kind of beer would you be?
Oh, of course, a lager. That's my favorite.
Okay, easy peasy.
Flocculation or attenuation?
It just depends on the yeast strand. attenuation. Yeah, attenuation is how much the yeast actually will eat and dissolve. Mm-hmm. You know, so what like your original gravity is what your final gravity is. So that's where you get your attenuation, how much energy the yeast can use. The flocculation is how well it settles out.
Great answer. Good answer. Good answer.
Good answer for Flocculation Nation, everybody. Woohoo!
Do you have one last one, James?
Nope, that was it.
No?
I think we put them through enough. Okay. I think this grain bill is getting pretty heavy here. So I think that mash tun is full.
Okay. Okay, Ronnie. Well, before we wrap up, is there anything you want to plug, or do you want to let our listeners know where they can find you on the socials?
No, I really appreciate you guys inviting me out and enjoy talking with y'all. And yeah, if you can get me on Instagram under RWS_brewing. And it's RW. Everyone's like a lot of people call me RWS. I'm like, no, it's just RW. Just S is like
apostrophe.
Plural, like my brewing is. So I'm like, I had to change my logo from the capital S to a small S. I'm like, okay, it's a small S.
Yeah.
So it's RW, but it's RWS_brewing. Man, I'm glad to share, you know, find me, reach out, if you got any questions. I'm glad to help out and respond any way I can. You know, only question that, only dumb question is one is not asked. Always reach out. I mean, I'm glad to help, and that's what we're here for.
Awesome. We really appreciate you coming on, and we had a lot of fun.
Likewise. I really enjoyed talking with y'all.
And this is your episode-ly reminder that we have merch.
Merch.
So go over to the link on our Instagram to access the site, and there you can find our podcast merch as well as our Brew Another Day initiative. And if you are a home brewer and want to come on and tell your story, send us a direct message on our Instagram.
And remember to rate, review, and subscribe, because that helps us reach new listeners just like you.
This has been
Double Hoppy.
Catch you on the brew side.